Welcome, everyone. This is Mark David, nutritional psychologist, author, eating psychology expert, and your mentor and guide for the Food Psychology Coach Training, presented in conjunction with the Spencer Institute. This is your free audio lesson, an introduction to food psychology coaching. So please enjoy. Thank you for your time, and we certainly look forward to your participation in the program. As we examine the terrain of food, eating, and nutrition in the United States of America, it's very easy to notice that there's a lot going on. On any given day, approximately 150 million people are on a diet. On any given day, approximately 125 million people are complaining of digestive upset. On any given day in the United States, up to 96% of all women will tell you that they dislike their bodies. On any given day, people are eating, people have a relationship with food. And when we talk about eating psychology, please note that we're not speaking about anorexia or bulimia or extreme obesity, which affects less than 0.1% of the population. When I'm talking about eating psychology with you, I'm talking about the other 99.9% of us who we're okay, we're basically fine perhaps, and we eat. And maybe we have some weight to lose, maybe we look in the mirror and don't like what we see, maybe we have certain habits when it comes to eating and nutrition that we'd like to shift or change. Maybe we'd like to take our way of being with food and health and nutrition to the next level. So this is what eating psychology addresses. This is what the food psychology program coach addresses. Again, the 99.9% of us who have a dynamic relationship with food, with eating, that we're looking to make better. Most of the potential clients that would come into your office are the people who have some weight to lose, are the people who look in the mirror and don't exactly like what they see, are people who will tell you that I overeat, people who will tell you that, I compulsively eat or binge eat sometimes, people who will tell you that, having energy and fatigue issues, I'm not quite at the level that I should be at. People who perhaps have mood issues, digestive issues. So these are the common nutrition and food-linked concerns that most of America would have on any given day. Now, what fascinates me, and perhaps you've noticed this, you can walk into any well-stocked bookstore, and you can probably find at least 100 titles written by 100 different nutritional experts. I'm talking about MDs, PhDs, registered dietitians. They all have something interesting and wonderful to say. They all have scientific proof of why their nutritional system or eating system is the best, and they're all saying something different. If, like me, you have noticed that, it's time to work with that. It's time to take the conversation, the collective conversation around eating, to a whole new level, because there's a lot of facts out there. There's a lot of nutrition information out there. What I've noticed is there's not exactly a lot of wisdom. So I like to say that when it comes to eating and when it comes to food and nutrition, we tend to be suffering from a high fact diet, too much information. How to wade through that information, how to support ourselves and our clients in tuning into what works for me, what works for my body, what is my body wisdom having to say about my nutritional and metabolic needs. Therein, for me, lies the sweet spot, and therein, for me, is the core of the Food Psychology Coach Training Program, which is how to empower your clients in having a relationship with food that works for them, in following the kind of diet that works for me, in shape-shifting my body in a way that's not extreme, but that's When I say shape-shifting, I'm talking about losing weight. And for sure, the majority of people in this country who are wanting to shift their body are wanting to shift their weight. What fascinates me is that the paradigm, when it comes to losing weight, focuses on exercise more and eat less. And it sounds simple. It's based on caloric theory. Calories in, calories out. That equation determines how much weight I will lose or gain. It sounds good. It sounds useful. However, after 45 years that we've been publicly putting forth this approach to managing weight, collectively it hasn't worked. 96 to 99% of all people who lose weight on a weight loss diet gain it back within 1 to 2 years. That for me is a brain-bending statistic. I'm going to say it again. 96 to 99% of all people who lose weight on a weight loss diet gain it back within 1 to 2 years. Point being, what we're doing doesn't work. And it's high time that we begin to look at the strategies that do create a permanent shift. And by the way, when you study those 1 to 4% of people who permanently keep their weight off, we find something very compelling. Those 1 to 4% of the people who have a permanent shift in their weight, in their relationship with food, will all tell you something powerful changed in my life. Something changed in that person's life story. They left a job, they entered a new job or a career, they got married, they got divorced, they moved. They had an internal shift around how they saw themselves, the world, their body, their relationship to planet Earth. Something powerful changed inside. So, as a food psychology coach, you're going to learn how to listen to people's stories. We're going to learn how to help restory with our clients, their relationship with food, their relationship with body, their relationship with the world, so as to help set your client up for a true, long-lasting metabolic transformation. By the way, not only have we failed when it comes to the strategy of eat less, exercise more when it comes to losing weight. Collectively, we don't have that much success when it comes to telling people, here's what you should eat, here's what's best for you, here's the health habits you should practice. Really, how many of you know what I'm supposed to be doing, know what I'm supposed to be eating, but you just don't necessarily do it anyway? So the information that we have is not enough. It's about what motivates us. More to the point, it's about what inspires us. Highly motivated person tends to mean a highly stressed person. Highly inspired person is someone who is moved by a much deeper place, from a much deeper place. So the good news is, despite all the pain and confusion in our culture when it comes to food, nutrition, eating, and weight, despite all the unsuccess that we've had with dieting, with diet foods, with the right foods, with the right way to eat, with the myriad of nutritional systems that become fashionable today and we forget about tomorrow, despite the Wild West nature of it all, the good news is that there's a tremendous need for the kind of wisdom, for the kind of inspiration and information that cuts through all the noise and helps your client get to a place where they can understand their own unique nutritional needs, their own personal needs, and indeed how that mind-body connection comes into play. Because when it comes to food, when it comes to the right way to eat, there's no one-size-fits-all. I don't know about you, but when I walk into a clothing store and the salesperson tells me, "Oh, well, that's a one size fits all shirt," I think to myself, "No, it's not. That's not going to fit me." Maybe. Slight probability. Same when it comes to nutrition. There are as many different nutritional systems on the planet as there are people. And here's the beautiful line that we're going to look to walk, which is how to indeed walk alongside your client and working with them, help them discover a way of eating, a style of eating, a relationship with food that works for them such that it shows up in their energy, it shows up in their digestive power, it shows up in their immune power, and it shows up in that person reaching their rightful natural weight and shape. Let's take a step back for a moment to a big picture. Psychologists, historians, people in the know often say you can tell a lot about a culture if you look at the creation story of that culture. And if you look at the creation story for Western civilization, we come to the first story that you likely ever learned in school, which was the story of Adam and Eve. And have you noticed that the story of Adam and Eve is one that is based on the act of eating something forbidden? So here's our primal creation myth. And it's all about eating something you're not supposed to eat. And think of some of the headlines from that story. The guy upstairs, the big guy upstairs, makes the first food rule: don't eat the apple. We break the food rule. Right after we break the food rule, remember what happens? Adam and Eve feel naked. They feel shame about the body for breaking a food rule, and then they're punished, kicked out of the garden. So, what I want to ask you right now, from a personal, psychological standpoint, does that story at all sound familiar to you as a person? Have you ever had your own food rule or heard a food rule? You break the food rule, you feel shame about your body, and you find a way to punish yourself for eating something or doing something that you weren't supposed to do? Well, it turns out that there is a huge amount of moralism, good food, bad food, when it comes to our relationship with eating. There's a huge amount of self-punishment that happens when it comes to our own rules. I break my food rules. Think of some of the ways people, perhaps yourself, might punish for eating a food on your bad list. We might punish by, "Oh, heck, I got off my diet. I'm gonna just really eat a bunch of garbage now." Or some people might go to, "Well, I broke my diet. I have to really get austere, and I'm not going to eat any desserts for the next 6 weeks." We might punish ourselves with self-judgment, with guilt, with going underground and eating in secret. We might punish ourselves by looking in the mirror and thinking negative thoughts. So there's all, here's another great punishment. Commonly happens amongst women. We punish ourselves by exercising. I'm willing to bet that 85% of the people, of the women I'll say, who I watch outside jogging, aren't necessarily jogging because "I just love to run. This is so much fun. This is the greatest thing on planet Earth." So many of us are exercising as a punishment for eating, as a punishment for having body fat. And that doesn't work. We should be moving because we love to move. We should be moving because moving and exercise because we're inspired to do it. It feels good. I like this. I want to do it more. So the point is this. I'm suggesting that the days of moralism around food, around punishing ourselves for breaking a food rule, it's over. We need to start shifting that in ourselves. We need to start shifting that in our clients because the punishments that we go through towards self drain our energy. The punishments we go to towards self literally put us in a physiologic stress response. And that physiologic stress response, and we're going to talk about this a bit more in a few minutes, that physiologic stress response when it's low level, day in, day out, the physiologic stress response, meaning I didn't eat the right foods, I'm no good, I'm too fat, I'm 5 pounds overweight, I shouldn't have eaten this, I should eat that, I should be more perfect with my diet. Those are stressful thoughts. Stressful thoughts create stress chemistry in the body. Stress chemistry, particular cortisol and insulin, when those two hormones are elevated low level, signal the body to store weight, store fat, not build muscle. Exactly the opposite of what we're trying to accomplish by following a good healthy diet and a good healthy exercise regimen. So here is both a punchline and a very powerful distinction, which you will be learning as a food psychology coach, powerful distinction in working with clients, which is this. Any strategy when it comes to food and diet, any strategy when it comes to good nutrition, any strategy when it comes to losing weight or controlling my appetite that is based on fear, that is motivated by anxiety, that is driven by stress, any such strategy is literally and physiologically counterproductive to what we're trying to accomplish. The stress state across the board is the most common risk factor and contributing factor and even causative factor to just about every disease and symptom known to humankind. Let's make this more down to earth and practical. Have you ever eaten under stress? Have you ever eaten under an anxious state? Let me remind you or enlighten you if you haven't heard this before. When we eat under stress, we are literally in the physiologic stress response. The physiologic stress response is an age-old evolutionary adaptation such that when the lion is chasing you, your heart rate goes up, your blood pressure goes up, blood is shunted away from your midsection. It goes to your arms and legs for quick fighting or fleeing. Blood rushes to your head for quick thinking. And when you're running from that lion for your life or fighting for your life, your digestive system completely shuts down. How come? Because when you're fighting for your life, you don't need to be digesting your Fruit Loops. All your metabolic energy is going into survival. So here's the kicker. When you're at home, you're at work, you're under stress, natural work stress, money, life, boss, husband, wife, kids, friends, whatever it is, the brain doesn't distinguish between a real or imagined stress. In fact, the scientific definition of stress is this: any real or imagined threat and the body's response to it. I'll say that again. Scientific definition of stress: any real or imagined threat and the body's response to it. So in other words, you could be sitting in a room by yourself in a great mood and all of a sudden think about the guy that done you wrong 20 years ago, and you could literally put yourself into a stress response. Heart rate up, blood pressure up, blood shunted away from digestive organs to arms, legs, and head. And if it's a full-blown stress response, you will be in complete 100% digestive shutdown. This, by the way, is the scientific explanation for heartburn. Heartburn is one of the most common digestive problems in this country. Heartburn is mostly treated with drugs. Nobody has a Prilosec deficiency when it comes to heartburn. What happens is when we're eating under stress, when we're anxious, when we're in a rush, even the act of eating too fast. So for you fast eaters, the act of eating too fast is considered a stressor for the body, and the body goes into a mild stress response, which means some degree of digestive shutdown. That little one-way door between your food pipe, your esophagus, and your stomach is designed to let food down, but not designed to let the contents of your stomach go back up. But under stress, that little doorway loses its intelligence and loses its full function because we're in a bit of a panic. So then food content, acid reflux comes up through that sphincter into the esophagus, and that acid content burns a little bit. That's why we call it heartburn. You take any heartburn client in the United States and you coach them into becoming a slow eater, a relaxed eater, I guarantee you within one day, two at the most, their heartburn will be gone. These are some of the amazing transformation shifts, I'm going to say mini miracles, we can work when we begin to notice how the body actually functions. When we begin to let go of some of our old concepts around eating, the old concept being, well, if I'm going to be healthy, if I'm going to have the right weight, if I'm going to have the right nutritional status, that simply means me eating the right foods and not too much of it. Well, in the Food Psychology Coach program, what you'll be learning is that half of the story is what you eat. Half of the story is good nutrition. Done. You've heard that before. You know what's good for you. The other half of the story, which is what this training focuses on, is who we are as eaters. Who we are as eaters, meaning what am I thinking when I eat? What am I feeling? What am I believing? What is my level of stress or relaxation when I'm eating? Am I receiving pleasure from my food? Am I breathing? What is my eating rhythm? Meaning, am I a meal skipper? Do I eat most of my calories at night, at midday, in the morning? How's it spread out? All these factors, which are mind-body factors, which are circadian factors, which are central nervous system factors connected to nutrition, all of these have a profound impact in terms of how we digest a meal, assimilate a meal, and calorie burn that meal. So, getting back to our highlighted example of eating under stress, what happens when we eat under stress is blood flow to the gut will be as much as 4 times less than normal. Enzymatic output in the gut can decrease by 20,000-fold. Your production of growth hormone and thyroid hormone both decrease during a stress response. Growth hormone and thyroid hormone, by the way, are charged with revving up the metabolic rate of just about every cell of your body. Those are the kinds of hormones that are helping you burn fat and build muscle. Again, during a stress response, we are producing more cortisol, more insulin when we're hyper-producing those substances. Even low level day in, day out, because of the normal everyday life stressors and the self-chosen stressors. Self-chosen stressors I'm calling the way we think. I'm not good enough. I'm not lovable as I am. I'm too fat. I didn't do the right thing. I broke my diet. I don't make enough money. I don't have the right husband or wife, whatever it is. Thoughts, negative thoughts, can create a stress response in the body. And again, when we're creating that biochemical milieu called stress chemistry, we are creating literally the opposite effect of what we are looking for when we're interested in good nutrition, when we're interested in calorie burning. So literally on a day in, day out basis, if we are in low level stress, your calorie burning function actually decreases. This to me is profound. This to me should be headline news. It isn't in the mass media, but that's what you're learning here right now. So by the way, if I'm stressing you out by talking about eating under stress, the good news is the optimum state of digestion, assimilation, and calorie burning happens to be the physiologic relaxation response. Let's just jump into the science for a moment. The same switch in your brain that turns on stress, the sympathetic nervous system, turns off digestion. I'm going to say that again. The same switch in your brain that turns on the stress response, which is the sympathetic nervous system, turns off digestion and assimilation. It's a one-to-one mapping. Conversely, the same switch in your brain that turns on the relaxation response, which is the parasympathetic nervous system, turns on full, healthy, digestive, and calorie-burning power. So one of the tricks you'll be learning as a food psychology coach is how to work with my clients to help coach them, counsel them, educate them, cheerlead them into the relaxation response when it comes to how they're eating, when it comes to what they're eating, when it comes to how they're living. Because check this out, you could be eating the healthiest food on planet Earth. You could be eating all the rice and beans and vegetables and tofu, whatever you think is healthy. You could be eating the best food on the planet. If you are not in the optimal state of digestion and assimilation, again, which is relaxation, you are only partially digesting that meal. More specifically, you're excreting nutrients. You're excreting water-soluble vitamins. You're excreting all the microminerals, all the macrominerals, and sometimes in large quantities. And you can measure this in the urine. You can measure this in the sweat. It's profound how significantly we decrease the nutritive function just by who we are being, how we are thinking, how we are feeling, and how we're living in any given moment. So you'll be learning very simple, straightforward, easy to practice mind-body nutrition techniques, breathing techniques, relaxation techniques, practices with eating, with meals, to help your clients relax into the eating experience, which profoundly shifts digestive physiology and calorie burning physiology. Here's another way to think about this. When does healing actually happen? When does the physiologic process of the maintenance and repair and the healing of body tissue actually happens? It happens during a relaxation response. This is why if you've had a rough day, you're feeling under the weather, you're feeling, gosh, I'm about to get sick. You don't say to yourself, wow, I'm about to get sick. You know, I'm going to go and run around and stress myself out. What you say to yourself when you're feeling under the weather is, I'm going to go home and sleep. I'm going to go home and rest and relax. Because that is the state under which we are designed to do healing, maintenance, and repair of body tissue. So, any strategy, whether it's a medical strategy, a nutritional strategy that is forcing us artificially to be in a stress state, is counterproductive to healing. It's counterproductive to healing whatever joint pain you have, whatever inflammation you have, whatever digestive issue you have. Even to lose weight, we need to break down tissue, we need to repair tissue, we need to detoxify the body, we're detoxifying the liver, we're breaking down fat tissue preferentially, we're breaking down diseased tissue preferentially in the body when we're losing weight. My point is this, the action happens when we approach the physiologic relaxation response. So this is what you're going to be checking out with your clients. You're going to be noticing with your clients, where does my client create self-chosen stress? How can I help my client relax into their eating challenge? Because even if your client is someone who overeats, if they're in self-judgment, if they're in constant pain over, I'm an overeater, this is no good, I should be ashamed of myself, that creates stress chemistry. So you'll be helping your clients learn to shift their habits, not through force, not through push, not through creating more negative self-talk, but by doing just the opposite. As a further example and inspiration for you to understand what's possible in the food psychology coach program and what you can learn that's truly unique and powerful in how you can serve others, is this piece around willpower when it comes to food. If I'm speaking in front of a room and there's 100 people and I ask that group of 100 people, how many of you have a willpower problem when it comes to food? Just can't exactly control your appetite and your food intake the way you'd like. Generally, I see about 85 hands go up. What I would like to offer to you is that willpower problem when it comes to food virtually does not exist. Maybe 1 out of 100 people have a willpower problem when it comes to food, but I don't even want to say that much. It's not out there, doesn't exist, no such thing. Here's what's going on for those people that claim to be an overeater and claim that it's a willpower issue. What's really happening is that we don't eat when we eat. Meaning this, there's something that scientists call the cephalic phase digestive response. The cephalic phase digestive response is a fancy gastrophysiology term for taste, pleasure, aroma, satisfaction, and the visuals you get from a meal. Now, according to the sum total of all the research on the cephalic phase digestive response, cephalic, by the way, means of the head. Cephalic phase digestive response, therefore, is sort of the head phase of digestion. Taste, pleasure, aroma, satisfaction, visuals of a meal. If you don't get that, if you're not tasting your food, if you're not getting pleasure from your food, if you're not there when you eat, i.e. you're multitasking, you're doing your work, you're sitting at your computer, you're talking on the telephone, you're not paying attention, your brain misinterprets that missed experience of the food as hunger. In other words, you could eat a big meal, and if you didn't notice it, and if you didn't pay attention, the brain isn't smart enough to say, hey, you were multitasking, you were working on the computer, you're watching the movie, you didn't pay attention when you're eating. All the brain knows how to say is, I don't remember getting any food. I don't remember enjoying. Hungry. So physiologically, we are literally driven to eat more when the brain doesn't register cephalic phase digestive response. Now, by the way, the sum total of all the research in this field says that 40 to 60% of a human being's digestive, assimilative, and calorie burning power at any meal comes from cephalic phase digestive response, the head phase of digestion. You tasting the meal, you receiving the meal, getting pleasure from it, being aware of it, enjoying it. So do the math of 40 to 60% of our literal digestive and calorie burning power comes from the head phase of digestion. If you're not getting it, then you are literally metabolizing a meal at 40 to 60% less efficiency. So then we have our clients trying to control their willpower, thinking that they're a moral weakling, and really what's simply happening is that if we were with the food, if we were present to our experience, we'd get what we would need from the meal. The brain would literally register, oh, these are the nutrients in my body. And most of you have heard, it takes the brain approximately 20 minutes to realize when the body is full. All this is saying, and this is true, all it's saying is body needs time when it comes to food. Body needs time to check in with itself. The body needs time to understand what's happening when it comes to nutritional status within. So as a food psychology coach, you will be doing an end run around so many of the outdated, antiquated nutritional and eating beliefs that we have, such as the best way to lose weight is to eat less and exercise more. Outdated. Or the best way to control what you eat is to have more willpower. Doesn't work. Allow me to share a real life example of what I'm speaking about, see if you can possibly relate. A number of years ago, I had a client, a man, I'll call him Chen. Chen lived in Toronto. He is a Chinese medical doctor, originally from China. When I saw him, he was age 54. Very vibrant man, healthy. He looked like he was 40. Really a picture of youth. Had lots of energy. He came to see me because for about close to 18 years, he had severe digestive issues, cramping, bloating, pain after each meal. And it was literally after breakfast, lunch, and dinner that he would experience this. Now, given the fact that he's a Chinese medical doctor and a very successful one and a good one, he tried to self-treat, which didn't work. He tried traditional Western medicine. He tried traditional Chinese medicine. He could not affect any kind of change. And he was seeing me because he heard I was a little more unorthodox, and at this point, he's seemingly willing to try anything. So one of the things that I will commonly do when I'm with a client is to say, okay, this is the challenge you're facing, digestive issues and bloating and gas and upset after every meal. Wow, for close to 18 years, that's a lot. Let's talk about what you eat. So here's how he describes his diet to me. He said, well, for breakfast on my way to work, I stop by McDonald's and I have two Egg McMuffins and I eat them in the car in 5 minutes on the way to work. I said, okay, what's for lunch? He said, lunch, I get back in my car, I drive back to McDonald's, I have two Big Macs, and I eat them in the car on the way back to work because I don't like to take breaks for breakfast or lunch. I said, okay, what's dinner? Well, dinner, I come home, and I'm pretty tired, so I'll just get some takeout, I'll get some pizza, I'll get a Hero, and I'll sit in front of the TV, and I'll eat. And I said to him, okay, I think I might have found your problem. And he immediately said to me, I just want to let you know that I know myself, I know who I am, I'm not going to change a single thing that I eat because my schedule is perfect, it's down, I like the way I do things, I like the way I do my lifestyle, and so you can't tell me to change my diet because I'm not going to do that. I thought to myself, very interesting. I still think I can help you. And here's what I told him. I told him, when you get your two Egg McMuffins at breakfast, I want you to stop the car, park it in the parking lot. I want you to take 15 minutes to eat your breakfast. I want you to take 5 to 10 long, slow, deep breaths and just enjoy it. And I said, lunch, when you get back in the car and do your two Big Macs, instead of driving in the car eating your Big Macs, I want you to stop the car, park in the parking lot. I want you to take 25 minutes. I want you to eat the Big Macs. I want you to be present. I want you to enjoy them. Take 5 to 10 long, slow, deep breaths. And I told him, same thing with dinner. Just take more time. I gave him a few mind-body relaxation techniques. And so, of course, he negotiates with me to, 8 minutes at breakfast and 11 minutes at lunch. So I agreed to whatever he said. 2 weeks later, I get a phone call, and he is absolutely excited, and he's absolutely thrilled, and he says to me, you are not going to believe this. He said, after 18 years, my digestive issues are completely gone. And he said, and you're not going to believe this. He said, I hate Big Macs. I hate Egg McMuffins. And I said, what are you talking about? And he says to me, have you ever tried to savor a Big Mac? He said, I can't stand them. He said, I eat these foods so fast because they taste so bad, and I didn't even know it. And he proceeds to explain to me that in those subsequent 2 weeks, he completely changed his diet, not because I said to him, you fool, you shouldn't eat junk food. He changed his diet because he took the time to tune into his body wisdom. He was given a tool that was empowering. He was given a tool that allowed him to get in touch with himself. I didn't force any nutritional information down his throat. I worked with him with where he was at and gave him the kinds of awarenesses that allowed his body wisdom, his body intelligence to wake up. Because when we do access body wisdom, that wisdom directs us. It inspires us. It tells us what we need to do and where we need to go when it comes to what we eat and how we do our food practice, our lifestyle practice. So the point is this. The point is there's some amazing work to do with our clients when it comes to helping them transform body and being and life. And it has little to do necessarily with giving people more information, even though this program that you'll be learning, the Food Psychology Coach Program, will have a tremendous amount of information. We will be discussing not just eating psychology, but a term I've coined called dynamic eating psychology, which is eating psychology for the rest of us, for any person who's not anorexic or bulimic but has a relationship with food and wants to use that relationship with food for transformation, so you can have your greatest amount of energy, so you can have your greatest amount of vitality, so you can be in right relationship with your body, so that when you look in the mirror, you're okay with yourself, so that when you sit down to a meal, you're okay with what you're eating, even if it's not the perfect meal. And you're doing the kinds of practices when it comes to relaxation, when it comes to receiving pleasure, because pleasure literally fuels metabolism. Breathing and oxygenation fuels metabolism. Being present and aware to your meal fuels metabolism. So you'll be learning all the mind-body science behind that. You'll be learning all the little tricks and shortcuts to working with people, not, and when I say from a psychological perspective, we're talking a positive psychology. We're not looking for what's wrong with the person. We're not going to be analyzing them per se, but we'll be using coaching tools that see the highest in a human being, that use inspiration to help your client get to the next place, as opposed to stress or anxiety or punishment. In the Food Psychology Coach Program, you'll learn how to listen on a powerful level, on a deeper level, to hear the important distinctions that we need to know about our clients to help move them to a new place, to help them do the little tweaks that will be able to change some of their unwanted habits around food. And when we change our unwanted habits around food, we will directly affect our metabolism. We will affect how we digest and assimilate and calorie burn. In the Food Psychology Coach Program, you'll learn the maps and the checklists that I've developed over 30 years that will allow you to question a client, hear their story, see where they're at, and work with them from that place in taking the small steps, the baby steps, making the little shifts that are really the big shifts. Oftentimes we think that we have to make these big, huge, powerful changes in our lifestyle and in our diet. We tend to look at our health as all or nothing. I'm either doing everything right or I'm falling off the wagon. And I will offer that such is not the case. There are so many small, wonderful tricks of the trade that will help our clients feel a difference,